This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 171 of The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world, for the week beginning Monday, the 7th of November, 2011. Stand up when I'm talking to you. Stop chewing. Look at me. Call that nose polished. Polish it properly. Now drop and give me 20. Right, I think I've established who's in charge. With me, Zaltor the Merciless, in London and in New York City. USA, it's the man who puts the into Smurfs. The former KGB and current MI5 undercover agent. Oh, balls, I wasn't supposed to say that, was I? Anyway, it's John Oliver!
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. Andy, I had the last date of the mini stand-up tour I've been doing on the weekends, last weekend, and it was at the beautiful old Warner Theatre in DC, right next to the White House. It's a very old building. Old, that is, of course, by American standards. Personally, I've had omelettes older than the Warner Theatre, but it was going to be an honour to be on the same stage that Frank Sinatra had once sung upon, and where I was planning to use the phrase, knuckle. As the guy before me was finishing up his set, Andy, I thought, well, I've probably just got time to go to the bathroom. And I was right about that in almost every way. The problem was that when I got into the cubicle in the bathroom and pulled the door shut, the handle came off in my hand. And it's a very special kind of feeling that rushes through a human's mind in a moment like that, Andy. For me, it was a deep, gravelly, oh, fuck. Like I said, it was an old theatre. There was no gap above or below the door to squeeze through. And I could hear that I was about 3 minutes away from getting introduced. So I started pounding on the door, literally shouting, help, help, I'm stuck in the toilet. And it really is hard to maintain any kind of dignity or grace when you find yourself shouting those words, Andy. It wasn't a proud moment by any means. Eventually, someone heard me, and I would like to thank the maintenance man who freed me by jimmying the door open with about 20 seconds to spare before my name was announced on stage. I'm pretty sure Frank Sinatra didn't do that, Andy. I'm pretty sure he wasn't pounding on a toilet door screaming, help! I, Frank Sinatra, am stuck in the toilet and I can't get out, shortly before going on stage to sing Fly Me to the Moon. But, you know, I've never claimed to have the same kind of effortless cool that he had. It turns out there is a significant difference between, ladies and gentlemen, here's Frank Sinatra and the Count Basie Orchestra. And, ladies and gentlemen, tonight's performance will be delayed as John Oliver has somehow locked himself in the bathroom. Not a proud moment.
That was part of Sinatra's rider, that, wasn't it? That's to make himself look better, everyone else who ever played the same theatre as him had to be locked in a toilet before they go on stage.
Yeah. That certainly is the only way of rationalising how a handle would be on so delicately. Also, Andy, I saw something pretty incredible in Boston the night before when I did a gig at MIT. And it was near Halloween, so a lot of people come in fancy dress, and yep, someone had come in fancy dress as you, Andy. Incredible reference. Top hat, big red hair, basically one of the Bugle shots. Pretty amazing.
I've made it. That's when you know you've made it. Was anyone burning an effigy of me or not? That's the next step.
Well, I can't 100% say that that person wasn't set fire to as they left the gig.
So this is Bugle 171. That's a summary of the long-running annual Heaven v Hell karaoke contest after 5,300 years. Once Heaven won, the devil does indeed have all the best tunes. Oh. And a very special bugle for any Brazilian buglers out there, because Article 171 of the Penal Code of Brazil defines the crime of estelionato, or defrauding the unwary. Because of which, apparently, in Brazilian Portuguese, sete literally 171, became a synonym for compulsive liar.
Is that true?
Yep.
But then you could just be lying about that. That would be the ultimate tribute.
Yeah, I know. But it does explain why my run of stadium gigs at the Maracanã in Rio has been postponed for legal reasons. Now, we've now done as many bugles as episodes of the TV series Mission Impossible. Did it really take 171 episodes to realise that quite a lot of those missions were actually quite possible. The follow-up series Mission, bit of a long shot, did not prove quite as popular, proving that the human soul craves not realism, but bullshit. And the 7th of November, meaning it is 11 years to the day, John, since the 2000 American presidential election.
Oh.
Oh, God.
Happy day.
Oh, dear. The injustice still rankles, admittedly not quite as much as the injustice of Italy knocking Brazil out of the 1982 World Cup, and it didn't have quite such significant repercussions on the way football has been played in the last 30 years, but still. Go democracy. Sorry, I missed out two words between go and democracy, the second of which was yourself. As always, a section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin. This week, a build-your-own audio battleship. Over the next 68 weeks, we'll be giving you one bit of audio for your battleship each week. Then over the following 12 years, each weekly battleship sound effect will build up to create a full Navy fleet modelled on classic international ships, including the British World War II destroyers HMS Good Day to You, Sir, and HMS Nutshot. Meant something different in those days. The 1980s aircraft carrier USS Chokeslam, the German torpedo boat Schnauzgrubler Scheinischnitzel, and of course the Mexican frigates, the ARM Funny Sombrero, and the ARM Unlikely Overhead Kick. But to begin here, the first in your battleship sound effects from the French First World War Richelieu-class battleship, the Overfed Goose, part one.
Top story this week, Greece is the turd. And we talked a little about Greece last week, Andy, and frankly, everything that's happened in Greece since then has been like an economic soap opera. I keep expecting a Greek politician to approach Prime Minister George Papandreou and say, I have bad news, George. The national economy is contracted by 5.5% this fiscal year. And what's more, I'm sleeping with your wife. In fact, Andy, the events have been so ludicrous and have happened so fast, it might help to have a little soap opera recap now. A little story so far. Previously on Greece. Last week, when you left us, magnificently moustached Greek George had dropped to his knees and begged European leaders for help. In Germany, Italian horn dog Silvio was still trying to apologise to German bombshell Angela for calling her an unfuckable lardass. French munchkin Nicholas offered polish-headed Papandreou a bailout 130 billion euros with a 50% write-off of its debts in return for deeply unpopular austerity measures, and the Greeks basically mailing their balls to Brussels. So, would George be able to convince the Greeks to accept that deal? Would the Greek people be able to raise enough money to pay for the postage to mail those balls? Would Silvio ever stop dry-humping the table leg? Find out that and more on this week's episode of Greece.
Well, the acting has been absolutely terrible, John. Just so unconvincing. You just don't really believe anyone means what they say. But after weeks and months of negotiations, Trojan horse trading and general macroeconomic wan-dangling and dick-swinging, Europe finally reached a deal to bail Greece out of the economic...
I'm telling you, what? That is close to... I mean, I think that makes as much sense in describing the kind of fiscal negotiations as anything I've heard. Economic wang-dangling.
We now have Jeff Sprague from Bloomberg on the line. Jeff, can you explain what's going on? Well, Peter, there's been an awful lot of wang-dangling here today in Athens. But Europe finally reached a deal to bail Greece out of the economic black hole it had dug itself into while shouting, hey, everyone!
Saying what now? Saying what? What did the Greeks say?
Hey, everyone!
Why would they say that?
I think they've just kind of got a bit of feta cheese stuck in their throat. Hello, everybody!
Hello! Hello, everybody. Is that what they were saying, Andy?
They'd say that, John, but you're a master of the vocal arts. Anyway, hey, everyone, they just said. You know how we provided the continent with the foundations of democracy, culture and civilization? Well, we are going to have to call in a couple of favours. Can you shovel money back into this black hole until we pop out the other side, please? Much obliged. Don't look at us like that. Who doesn't want to retire at 38 on a pension worth five times their salary with free wrestling oil for life, eh? But at last, John, the deal was agreed, a not entirely fragrant cocktail of a 100 billion euro mega loan and a 50% debt write-off. And after all the uncertainties, the doom-mongering, the fears of a total meltdown of the entire continent's economy and its currency, at last, this was something to rebuild on, something everyone had compromised on, to thrash out a deal that gave at least a hedgehog's willy of hope for the future. It was a relief all round that finally the worst might be over. And then Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou, he paused for a minute, he put on his most serious face, and then his cheek started twitching slightly, and he frowned over seriously, he coughed a little, and his chin started to quiver, the eyes creased slightly at the corners, the neck tensed up as a micro-chuckle half escaped his throat. His shoulders started to rise and fall. His eyes clenched shut. His head bowed. No, he couldn't hold it in any longer. Ah, we're going to have a referendum. Ah, priceless. You should see the look on your faces. Got you. Got a lot of you. Oh, yes, that was worth the wait. What are you all looking at me like that for?
It is amazing that it was just a week since Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou was heralding a new day for Greece and a new day for Europe after marathon talks held in Brussels. What he didn't say was that it was going to be a very shitty new day indeed. But it did all seem like it was over and that Europe had successfully kicked the Greek can far enough down the road that it didn't have to think about it for a while. And then, as you say, Papandreou, just being Papandreou, seemingly out of nowhere, announced that he was going to have a referendum and asked the Greek people whether they wanted this to accept the deal or not, to which the response of the EU leaders was something along the lines of, "What, mate? You're having a refer what now? I don't remember you mentioning that at any point during the last few days of frantic negotiations. I'm pretty sure I would have remembered it, because if I'd ever heard you say something that even rhymed with that word, I'd have slapped you across your stupid Greek face!"
On the news that Papandreou had pulled his surprise referendum rabbits out of the hats and then bitten its head off, the stock markets slumped on the news like the total pricks that they are. They responded by saying, "What about us? What about us?" Well, listen to me, stock markets. Have some f***ing balls, you losers! Can you not take a single bit of bad news without shitting your pants and running to mummy? How old are you? New York Stock Exchange, you're 194. Old enough to know better. London Stock Exchange, 210. Grow up, you tool! NASDAQ, you're only 40, I'll let you off. You're a young stock exchange, I understand. But the lot of you, if you have that nervous a disposition, see a shrink and get another f***ing job. Knit some f***ing socks or something. I think it's because they were overprotectively parented by their governments, John. They've been allowed to have exactly what they wanted ever since they were small. No wonder they're so ill-adjusted to the modern world. Pricks. And that was a passage from the new book by the Nobel Prize-winning economist and former World Bank big cheese, Joseph Stiglitz, entitled "F*** Me, This Planet Is F***", published on Monday.
Prime Minister Papandreou's argument for the referendum was that it was democracy in action and that he was giving the Greek people a choice. Pretty terrible choice, though, Andy. That's not an appealing-looking tasting menu. Do you want to accept the austerity measures and live in a Mediterranean hell for the next decade? Or do you want to leave the Eurozone, go bankrupt, and live in a Mediterranean Mad Max Thunderdome for the next decade? Essentially, it's, do you want to eat bull testicle soup or bull testicle carpaccio? Either way, you're eating bull testicles, but you do have a choice about how you'd like them prepared for you.
Well, you've got to go with soup there, surely. I mean, that's surely better to have them cooked than raw. What do you reckon, Chris? Well,
I think that all range of foods can be improved by grilling them.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Really? Even sushi, Chris? Send that back to the kitchen.
Don't
just,
say you've it. Never had it.
Pop it under the George Foreman. There's significant anger at Greece all around the world, and the EU seems to be considering for the first time whether it's actually worth trying to keep Greece in the Eurozone at all. But should we really be that angry with them, Andy? The Greeks invented civilization. It seems only fair that they're also allowed to destroy it. The world is their sandcastle, Andy. Who are we to say that they can't kick it down and piss all over it?
Testify! So why is it, John,
that Greece seems to have so much trouble getting things done and being productive. Well, Buglers, I'm going to help you understand this now. So just set yourself a household task or a mental challenge, maybe, you know, descaling that bagel machine that's been down the back of your sofa for the last couple of years, or maybe going back to the early Bugles and trying to do the audio cryptic crossword again. Something that really requires concentration. OK, you're trying it now? Off you go. How are you getting on? Not too bad? All right. Now try doing it with this in the background. There you go, that's not so easy now, is it? I think we're all starting to understand why Europe is in the position that it's in.
Andy, why have you just smashed all my plates?
Yeah. I can't stop my feet moving, Andy. The music speaks to me. The Greek Prime Minister currently looks about as happy as you'd expect a man to look who is staring into the economic abyss. And part of you starts to feel sorry for him on a human level. No one is saying that he has not been left holding this shit pie, but it's a shit pie that he very much helped to bake. And for interested buglers, here is the recipe for the Greek shit pie that we're all about to be offered a slice of. Take a pinch of the most brilliant minds the world has ever produced and create a system of government and philosophy the likes of which the world has never seen. Then do nothing. Do absolutely nothing whatsoever. Allow to decay and fester. Simmer for 2,000 years, add a slice of pita bread to garnish, and then serve to nauseated dinner guests. It takes a huge amount of effort to screw up this badly, which is not something that you expect from the Greeks, Andy. There was even more confusion as rumours whipped around the G20 in Cannes on Thursday. It was a real will-he-won't-he rumour mill among the press. Will he resign? Will he try to force the referendum through? Will he turn up in a toga and claim he's gone mad and that everyone should refer to him as Aristotle? One of the rumoured plans was that Papandreou would offer to form a national unity government with Lucas Papademos, a former head of the Greek Central Bank and former vice president of the European Central Bank, as its leader. So his solution was to put a banker in there, Andy, who has overseen this shitstorm. That's what he thought Greece needed, more bankers. He really has his finger on the pulse of what the Greek people want. And that pulse has not beaten for months now. Then,
yeah, about 15,000 months, I think.
Then he seemed to U-turn and say he would resign. Then he U-turned on that U-turn and said he was going to stay and force the referendum. Then he C-turned on that and said he would stay, but he was going to drop the referendum, saying, I will be glad even if we don't go to a referendum, which was never a purpose in itself. I'm glad that all this discussion has at least brought a lot of people back to their senses. That's right. This has been a good thing. It's been a triumphant example of leadership. That's why there are people with burning torches outside your office window. They're so grateful, they just want to make sure you're warm. No one seems sure what Greece are going to do next. They've become a big tease. They're like a stripper that you desperately don't want to see naked, peeling off each layer as you dread what is lurking underneath. In times of crisis, often what's required is a level head.
A lot of empirical research went into that joke as well, Buglers. Do you want to suffer for that?
What's required is a level head delivering a calm, reassuring message. Step forward, Nicolas Sarkozy, who told a press conference at the G20 in Cannes yesterday, if the euro explodes, Europe will explode. That's not a statement, Andy. That's the tagline for an action movie. If the euro explodes, Europe will explode. And only Jean-Claude Van Damme can stop it.
The problem is, John, it is always ordinary people who are worst affected by the fallout from these economic problems. And that has been shown this week in very harsh light with the news of the divorce of Kim Kardashian. Ugh. The reality TV star has blamed her rapid separation after just 10 weeks of marriage on, quotes, chaos in the European economy. Mm-hmm. A tearful Kardashian speaking as she delivered the annual Hannah Spirit Memorial Lecture at the Harvard Business School said, my husband Chris Humphreys supports the EU bailout deal for Greece, but I don't. He won't compromise. He says there's no alternative. But I think it impacts too heavily on the ordinary innocent Greek people who want nothing more than to have enough money to be able to get naked, oil up and wrestle young boys before discussing how man should live and strapping on big fake willies just like they always have. Chris Humphreys won't give ground, and I cannot continue living in a marriage without some kind of macroeconomic give and take. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Keynesian, but I'm prepared to see things from his more monetarist point of view. But he isn't prepared to do likewise. It's over. Now all I ask is that the media stop reporting on this matter and focus once more on more important issues, such as my tits. Well, I guess, John, the most important thing now is to think, how are we going to help Greece out of this mess? I mean, I think the Eurozone countries, they now have to be strong and unified. That's important. In fact, I would say that's the key. They've
Andy, not 2 weeks in a row.
They've got just about got away without everything collapsing so far. But next time, they might not be so lucky.
No, this is bullshit.
So what can be done?
Bullshit.
What a mess, eh? So there's no point feeling bitter and twisted about it. You can see why people aren't happy with spending so much on the bailout. I didn't pay my taxes for this, they think. And as for Papandreou, what a spanner. Cop it. I think he will in tonight's no confidence vote.
Stop it!
He needs to sort
it
out fast,
stop
John.
Stop it!
He needs to work fast.
Stop it!
He needs to hurry or to key investors will pull out. They'll say, Rhett, seen enough! you sack of shit! So quick, looming on the horizon could be even worse to come. Sorry to be a prophet of doom. Come on, John. Come on. Just trying to see the funny side of a very dark situation. Come on, mate. Have a sense of humour.
Oh, off!
You've got to back laugh about it.
Is there any more?
No, I'm done, John. So I know you didn't have your usual recuperation phase after last week's.
Two weeks in a row is
too much.
Well,
it's just we missed so many weeks of bugling this summer that...
No, it's too much, Andy.
We had like only 1 week in six or seven, didn't we, with a proper bugle. I feel I'm probably missed out on a run of puns at some point there.
No, it's basic farming principle, Andy. You've got to have crop rotation. You just overworked the land there.
Right.
Oh.
I think the land
let my soul lie fallow for a week.
With modern science, I think the land can take it, John.
No, it can't. It just can't. Protest update now. And Andy, if companies manufacturing tear gas have ever thought about floating themselves on the stock market, now might be the time. It is a boom economy in every sense of the word. But it's not just tanks firing into civilians in Syria, and it's not just police shooting Occupy Oakland protesters in California with rubber bullets. All over the world, people are standing up and calling bullshit wherever they see bullshit. Bolivia news! And a group of indigenous Amazonians reached La Paz last week to a triumphant welcome. The two-month march was made by 1,000 men, women and children campaigning against plans to build a road through a rainforest reserve. And if that sounds like a lovely trip, you know, something an 18-year-old student on a gap year might attempt and come back with beautiful photographs and ethnic beads that they insist on wearing for the next 3 years, then think again. Because during their 8 weeks on the road, protesters were blocked and then dispersed by riot police using batons and tear gas, scenes which provoked an outcry across Bolivia. So much so that two ministers resigned amid the outrage. And Andy, has there ever been a good end to firing tear gas canisters at people? I usually find that people covered in tear gas are quite a lot angrier than people not covered in tear gas. In fact, I'd go so far as to say there's a mathematical correlation between tear gas coverage and fury.
That's just such a shame it took you a whole Edinburgh run to work that out.
The Bolivian president, Evo Morales, is under increasing pressure as his poll numbers have plunged. In fact, about 45% of voters spoiled their ballot papers in last Sunday's election for top judges, which was a key policy of Evo Morales. 45%, Andy, that's an impressive turnout of people so angry that they want to officially register that anger by explicitly not engaging in a process that they're actively engaging in. I tell you what President Morales should do, Andy, to calm that 45% of people down. Tear gas them, Andy. I know it hasn't worked so far, but statistically it has to happen eventually.
There have also been major protests in Chile, the biggest for decades in that needlessly long and thin country. And people have been demanding free public education. And I would say this to the protesters of Chile. Do not wish for that. That is, in fact, the last thing you want. Do not find out about the world. It will only upset you. And besides, there's no point learning it. There won't be any jobs. There won't be any jobs after you've been educated. why raise the Hindenburg of hope?
God, that is a bleak sentence.
Well, it's a bit of a slow burner.
Too soon.
Were you actually on that airship, John? Were you actually on that airship? Don't be offended on other people's behalf, John.
So, how, I wonder, Andy, did the police respond to these protests in Chile? I'll give you a quiz. Was it A, with flowers, B, with a gift plate of assorted deli meats, or C, with tear gas and a water cannon chaser? Do you know what, Andy? I'll tell you. They responded with tear gas and water cannons to disperse the crowds. Yeah. And if we're concerned about future world water shortages, which it seems we are, we might want to stop turning water cannons on groups of peaceful protesters as well. Truth is, Chile just never seems united unless they've got trapped miners underground. In fact, if I was the Chilean president, I'd be burying those plucky little miners again as quickly as possible and get that live feed set up so we can pull them out in those little one-man torpedo cages again. Chi-chi, lele! Chi-chi, lele! Oh, that was great! What are we angry about again?
The latest from the Occupy London protest now, and St Paul has resigned. In a tearful statement, the five-time former epistle writer of the year said, "With great regrets that I've decided I can no longer continue as a saint. My epistles have, I'm afraid, failed to provide an adequate solution to all the world's economic problems in the last few weeks, and therefore I must step down. The cathedral will, until a permanent replacement is appointed, be temporarily named after the little-known St Alvin."
It is amazing the controversy that they've caused, the protests in London. They've been camped outside St Paul's. Well, they've managed to cause this controversy with their entirely peaceful behaviour. Now, any idiot can make the news by throwing a brick through a window, Andy, but can you make the news by sitting quietly outside a tent? That's the real test. The cathedral claimed that they were losing £20,000 a day during its closure. How, Andy? How the holy f*** can they make £20,000 a day through tourism? How much are people putting into those donation buckets?
And how much?
It's the most profitable business in the UK.
And how much is that bishop showing? He's got to be flashing a lot of flesh to get that amount of money from his visitors. But it's been kind of interesting following this, that, as we talked about last week, Boris Johnson said the protesters had made their points. And they've been criticised as well, the protesters, for not coming up with a proper alternative, as if that is their responsibility. And it seems to have come down to this kind of black and white debate between should we keep all capitalism or will we have no capitalism at all? And I don't really like my economics like that, John. I like my economics like a prison refurbishment officer likes his paint catalogues, with plenty of shades of grey. Bugle feature section now, and parenting. And there's been a surprise entry into the stakes for International Parent of the Year recently, and that is Carlos the Jackal, once the world's most notorious terrorist. And a couple of weeks ago, in an interview, he expressed regret over the way he's lived his life and all the kidnapping and killing that he's done. Not regrets for what he inflicted on his victims, but regret for the fact that his career and lifestyle led to him being an absent father. And, you know, parenthood's, as I'm sure, John, you found since you got Hoagie. It's a joyous thing, but it brings its responsibilities as well. And Carlos is clearly regretting not really living up to those responsibilities. And I guess imagine the awkward conversations he must have had with his kids. "Daddy, what do you do?" I don't really want to talk about it, love." "Oh, go on. I've got to do a project at school. What my mummy and daddy do." "All right. I guess you could probably say then, darling, that I am a lobbyist of sorts, slightly more violent than the average lobbyist, but it is lobbying." "Okay, Daddy. Why aren't you ever here at weekends?" "Well, it's just I have to travel a lot with work." "Why?" "Well, darling, do you know what a fugitive is?" "Never mind. Anyway, don't listen to what the kids in the playground are saying. I'm just a bit tied up with fleeing the tentacles of international justice. Sorry, I'm busy at the office. Just a lot of paperwork needs doing. Nightmare." "Daddy, why do people always scream and run away when they see you?" "Look, darling, I bought you a new dolly." So, Must have been difficult for him. Difficult for him, John.
The full comments from Mr. the Jackal were, I was an absent husband most of the time. I couldn't bring up my children. Just the youngest one until the age of 5 or 6 years old, and I regret that. But, well, it's the price to pay. And CTJ claims to have killed 83 people in terrorist attacks in London, Paris, Berlin, Vienna and elsewhere during the 70s and 80s. And if your biological father was an international terrorist, you were, I don't know, little Billy the Jackal or Sally the Jackal, you might find yourself saying to him, but you know what, Dad? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about the absent part. I think it all might have worked out for the best, because I'm guessing, it's just speculation. Obviously, we don't really know each other, but I'm just guessing that you'd have been f***ing psychotic to live with.
Have you brought me a souvenir back from your trip, Dad? Oh, not one of those again.
Not another head.
Well, is he the kind of parent you'd want as you were growing up? Hey, Dad, I'm struggling with my maths homework, and Mr. Bagshaw says that if I don't pass my algebra test next week, I'll have to drop down a class. What should I do, Dad? Oh, never mind, sweetie. I'll teach you how to wire up a car bomb and you can pop it under Mr. Bagshaw's Ford Cortina. Thanks, Dad. You're the best dad in the world. Sorry, not best. Most wanted. Daddy, there's a boy in my class I really fancy, and I think he fancies me, but I'm not sure, and I don't know if I'm ready for a proper relationship yet, and I don't want him to use me to impress his friends, but I think he really does actually like me, and I don't really want to make the first move just in case, and I know he used to go out with Becky, and I don't want to upset her. Daddy, I could really do with some advice. Well, darling, you're 16 now, and these things are never easy growing up. What's his name? Brian. Well, if you want to impress Brian, I guess what I always advise is recruiting a gang of highly trained armed operatives and getting them to storm your class. Take all your classmates hostage and threaten to execute one every 15 minutes until Brian agrees to go to a movie with you. Do you really think that'll work, Dad? Yeah, I'll make a couple of calls. You go and borrow your mum's makeup, we can make this work. By the way, is there anyone in your class you particularly like to be killed first?
Oh, dear.
Great Dad! A great Dad. You know, parenting has its struggles, John, and, you know, at times when I feel that I'm not maybe the perfect father to my children, at least I can always think to myself, I'm a better father than Carlos the Jackal. Your emails now, and this one comes in from Carrie on the subject, Big Brass Balls. Strong title for an email. Dear Mr. J. Oliver, A. Zaltzman and F. U. Chris, I would like to propose an award that you would bestow upon a soon-to-be unlucky recipient, the Bugle's Big Brass Balls. It would go to the person whose cojones clang the loudest, thereby drawing attention of the kind most people work to avoid. And I have two nominees. First, there are these Mexican members of the international hacker collective Anonymous, whose ability to remain anonymous will surely be tested soon. They have demanded that Los Zetas, a Mexican drug cartel that other Mexican drug cartels consider a tad too brutal, release a member of their collective who was kidnapped while hanging up posters. Or else they'll reveal information about their identities and business interests. Normally, young men who spend most of their waking hours on the internet
That's ballsy.
So normally, young men who spend most of their waking hours on the internet don't threaten the second most powerful crime syndicate in Mexico.
Oh, my God.
But these guys just did. That takes mountain-sized brass balls.
That's bold.
Clang. And second, there's the Begayrat Brigade, a pop band out of Lahore, Pakistan, whose catchy new track makes fun of the following people and groups. Most major political parties, the head of the judiciary, former cricketer, now politician Imran Khan, the head of the armed forces, a fundamentalist political assassin, one of the Bombay attack terrorists, a religious scholar, Blackwater, and the police. Basically, a lot of people who are used to solving their problems by shooting holes in those problems with guns. Oh, and in their video, they take further pot shots and hold up a sign that says, "This video is sponsored by Zionists." Oh, and another that said, if you want a bullet through my head, like this video.
I've seen this video.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And it's so weird. It starts off, they're three, like, you know, sort of young, cute lads singing a song about curry that they don't like. And I was thinking, this is bullshit. This is not what this person said it was. And then you kind of... they do have big brass balls.
Curry concludes the email by saying, these guys can fire their percussionist and just clang their big brass balls together on their next song. Surely there must be others out there whose big brass balls need acknowledging. So maybe we should open this out to buglers. If you've got anyone who thinks requires some big brass balls to be ceremonially clanged in their direction. Please email us at thebugle@timesonline.co.uk.
We have another email here from Dave Anderson, who says, "Dear Andy and John, I haven't read in a while, but I just wanted to make sure that you knew that my wife and I did our part in getting us to the big 7 billion milestone. My wife gave birth to our daughter at 5 a.m. on Friday, October the 28th. While she may not be the exact 7 billionth person on the earth, we didn't get too hung up on arbitrary milestones. You can't get to 7 billion without the other 6,999,000,000. It's a team effort, to be sure. Being a Cardinals fan," he says, "and having lived in St. Louis for 10 years, the game was fantastic, and the birth of our child a few hours later was a pleasant addendum to an exceptional night. After listening to episode 170, I couldn't help pondering that while my wife was struggling with the agony of childbirth..."
They make a big fuss about it, women. I've seen it. It doesn't look that bad.
"Andy was writing a series of Greek geography puns. Little did you know that was part one of two."
They usually do trilogies. It's the ancient Greek way. Don't you know I'm a classical scholar? This is a trilogy. They did tragedies and trilogies, and I believe pun runs should be done the same. So strap in for next week. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, no.
I'm off next week.
Yeah. But so am I now. He said, I think there's more than coincidence to that. Goes on to say, "We named our daughter Cassandra after the daughter of the King of Troy. We hope that, like her namesake, she can clearly see all the upcoming tragedies from overpopulation, global warming and economic collapse, but be powerless to do anything about it or convince anyone to take action." Dave Anderson. Well, congratulations, Dave. Congratulations, Mrs. Dave. And welcome to the world, Cassandra. New bugler, Andy. New bugler.
Yeah. Sport now, and the big sport this week, John, has been the conviction of three Pakistan cricketers for their role in the spot-fixing scam that we talked about last year. It happened in last summer, the Lord's Test of 2010. And three Pakistan cricketers have now been jailed, including the captain, Salman Butt, who was found to have been the orchestrator, along with a dodgy agent of the match-fixing. And he was found guilty of this spot-fixing, despite having pleaded not guilty. And by a great irony, it emerged that his wife had given birth minutes before the verdicts were announced, and she gave birth by elective caesarean in a hospital in Pakistan. And Salman Butt commented afterwards, "I'm absolutely thrilled. Mother and baby are both doing well after an entirely natural birth conducted without any medical assistance." If you want more on the cricket match fixing, which is a pretty gloomy tale, my latest blog on Cricket Info's got lots of stuff about it, and stuff, John, about fascinating, potentially fixed match between the USA and Canada in 1844, which I think your people need to sort out big time. And this also, it's the 100th anniversary this week of the death of the controversial baseball star Maxton Troulard, the only Major League Baseball player ever to hit a home run with an erection. And I mean hit a home run with his erection. The story goes that in the ninth innings of an 1888 game between the New York Snouts and the Baltimore Boobies, had a very different meaning in those days, a boobie was a large counterweight on a warehouse door. Troulard had caught sight of teammate Luton Arrowhead's notoriously attractive new wife sitting behind the dugout, nibbling a suggestively shaped cinnamon pretzel. Clearly distracted, Troulard lazily swung and missed at the first two pitches flung by the boobies' closer, Turbot Chetwode, before turning to look at Mrs. Arrowhead again, just as she sensuously licked a Dribbly Brian, late 19th century America's biggest selling ice cream. Chetwode threw the 0-2 pitch just as a by now visibly aroused Troulard span back round into his stance. A high curveball inside the plate swung in towards Troulard's nether regions, striking his sergeant sausage at the maximum acceleration of its swing. Donk! Troulard's trouser trinket timed it perfectly, and away it flew, catching a crosswind towards left field, as Troulard collapsed to the ground, screaming and clutching his rapidly detumescing scrank handle. The ball flew into the bleachers, and the crowd roared its approval. Troulard, after a 10-minute recuperation clench at home plate, whimpering and asking for his mummy, eventually began crawling around the bases, arriving at home plate 24 minutes after donging the game-winning dinger, to be embraced by his jubilant teammates, and by Mrs. Arrowhead, who said, "My, my, Mr. Troulard, you sure know how to swing your ding-a-ling." Troulard fainted, was hospitalised for a month, and swore a vow of celibacy. Now batting with an immovable grimace, a pronounced stoop and a cast-iron codpiece, he played out his major league career with the Boston Phlegms, the Boston Flobs, the New York Opium Dens, the Seattle Death Threats, the Fresno Camemberts, and, of course, the New York Forks. 100 years ago today.
I feel like this show has been nicely sandwiched between two wang-dangling stories.
That's a classic way to construct a piece of art.
Yes, yes. Well, that's it.
That's it.
That's it. That's that it is it. Week.
So tune in for part three of the Greek
no,
puns.
No, 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 Andy, I don't want to come
why,
over...
Why are you so afraid of jokes, John?
I don't
want to
come over...
Don't you want to make people laugh?
I feel, I realise I sound like Ben Kingsley in Sexy Beast, Andy, but no, 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 no!
Goodbye, Buglers. Have an extraordinary... Oh, next week as well, also, we will be covering a story that some of you have alerted us to on the Bugle Twitter feed, at Hello Buglers, about unexpected upshot of the economic crisis, which is the postponement of the release of the most awaited album of the year, which is an album of love songs by Silvio Berlusconi.
That sounds like a joke. That's actually a series of facts.
So do tune in for that next week. Goodbye, Buglers.
Goodbye.